And we are live. Gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Mecca Banter podcast. I am this week's host, Henry Wind. You can find me on Twitter at Henry Wind. It's a great week to be a Manchester United fan, as it is always. And
season's over, Hen.
Today, we celebrate as U.S. men's national team fans. And it is a great week to be a U.S. men's national team fan. But before we dive into the goodness that is the U.S. men's national team, let's introduce the fellas. Nick Haeflinger, how are you doing today, brother?
You know, I'm feeling great. I'm happy to be back on the pod. I've been a little hiatus for a couple of the last episodes, so I'm happy to be back. I'm also happy that we're not talking about Chelsea anymore, so that makes me happy to be back.
We are.
I know, but it's only transfer.
Well, we will.
The season's over. Yeah. We are all tied for first place right now, boys.
We'll find a way.
That's all I have to say.
There's only one team at the top right now.
You can find me on Twitter as usual, Haefy4. I'm going to start trying to get active on there. So if you want to talk some banter, let me know.
Love it. Welcome back to the pod, brother. Lucas Winkelmann, check in, bro. How you doing?
Good. USA own North America in its rightful Woo! Place. Stoked to dive into those games and talk about some transfers. There's some spicy stuff that's happened since we last got to talk about it. So pumped to be here. Good to see you guys too, as always.
When you said we own North America, you looked down and I swore that you got a sound machine and you were going to play the wah, 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 wah. It really looked like you were
I would have been so hyped.
Yeah, I was like, we're like all the way through the season, but we finally got it. We're here. We made it. And last but certainly not least, Connorson Dobry. How you doing?
What's going on, fellas? It's good to see you. Happy to be here. Happy to dive into some good U.S. men's national team. We got some good news and some bad news over the last couple of days, but at the same time, always happy when we lift another trophy. Wink said it best. We absolutely own North America. I think, what is it, like 5 wins and a draw against Mexico in our last 6. I think we've only conceded 1 goal.
They're so bad.
So in a dead summer, it's nice to have the national team lift the trophy. Some good stuff to dive into. So good to see you, good to see you, fellas.
Good and bad for the U.S. men's national team, I feel like, is a great way to transition. But before we focus on the bad, let's highlight the good. The U.S. men's national team is coming off a great week where we were victorious in both of our games in the CONCACAF Nations League, one against Mexico and the final against Canada. Now, fellas, I know that we tuned into both of these games. It's always good when you have 5 goals go in the net for us and 0 for the other team in both games. What were your thoughts on both of these games, and what were you proud of? We played some different lineups in both games. What were your thoughts?
I feel like it's makes sense to talk about the Mexico game and the dogfight that game was first. You know, obviously that was BJ Callahan's first game as interim head coach. You know, he could have gone a lot of different ways with the lineup. He decided to play Balogun up front, his first international game in the Stars and Stripes. And, you know, after that one and the one against Canada, I think it's safe to say he's already the best striker we've had in quite a long time. He is so fun to watch up there. But for those who didn't watch it, Captain America Christian Pulisic had a double in the first half, and that was his first game for club or country since April 15th. So quite the showing for him. Pepe scored in what was it, like the 80th minute, right after he subbed on, so a little super sub moment there. But I feel like the highlight outside of Pulisic here was both teams finished with 9 players at the end of the game. It was Weston McKennie got his shirt tore up, red card. Montes, or the other guy from Mexico, was the one that got a red at the same moment. And then also in the second half, Sergiño Dest and Ortega, however you pronounce it, also got a red later, which meant that we would be out Weston and Dest for the final against what ended up being Canada. But I'm curious your guys' thoughts on such a chippy second half, which we kind of knew was coming, maybe not to the extent that it happened because these games against Mexico are always this way, but I think that things got a little out of hand, and I think that both sides kind of regret the way that it turned out. But as, you know, fans and supporters, I thought it was fun as hell to watch.
I mean, I feel like Mexico has really lost the plot. Like, I mean, Dobes, you alluded to it. They're 0-6 against us. They haven't won in six games against us. And prior to that, I feel like it went back and forth all the time. Like, this was a really big rivalry. I've seen a lot of videos on TikTok, honestly, of the Mexico national team supporters just talking about how embarrassing the performance was. And it wasn't only losing 3-0. It was losing in the fashion that they did. They went down a goal and they started fouling. They started hacking. Their fans were chanting, you know, really nasty things at our players. They were throwing beers at our players. I mean, it got really hostile. You know, and what we've seen from this U.S. men's national team for a couple of years now is they all fight for one another. They all have each other's backs. You know, Wes got his red card because he was coming in to defend, you know, Ballo. So I think it's pretty fascinating to see our guys rally against each other. But I feel like Mexico's really lost the plot. You know, as of right now, FIFA has them as the 15th ranked team in the world. I have to imagine that that's just going to plummet after this week. They really are not a good team at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Henry. I was literally looking up our last six, and they've only scored one goal against us. I don't even know if you guys remember. It was like a mistake that we passed it back to their striker. Mm-hmm. We had a breakaway. So they really haven't even had any clear, obvious goal-scoring chances against us in their last six. So, I mean, I completely agree. I think USA has dominated and shown our talent. And kind of, I think it goes back to if you look at the starting lineups and where everyone's playing at right now. Like, we have a couple people playing in some pretty top-level clubs. Well, not Christian. I don't know why he doesn't play at Chelsea. But that's a whole nother topic. But, yeah, I was very happy with the way we reacted to some of the chippiness. I liked the passion, but also at the same time, Dest and McKinney are very two important players on our team. And in future tournaments, I think that could backfire on us in the final if we ever get to that stage. So I definitely hope some composure and some maturity happens in the long run. But I mean, the passion I obviously absolutely love, and Mexico was getting definitely very chippy, so I could see why the reaction happened.
It's definitely something to worry about, but I think that there aren't really many other teams where we need to worry about that kind of physicality other than
True.
When we play Mexico. I could be wrong. I'm sure there's others out there, but I'm sure it's something they'll learn from.
I felt like that was elevated. I also think that Wes's red card was a little bit harsh. I think that Dest, you can make an argument for, you know, he was definitely starting shit on the side. But when you look at the replays back on Wes, I mean, Wes was, you know, one guy in a sea of nine guys from the Mexico team, both on the field and from the bench that were surrounding him, that, you know, he really wasn't doing a whole lot to instigate there. I think that that was a pretty harsh red card for him. And like he's kind of our tone setter when it comes to the physicality there. You know, aside from the Reds, you know, there are two positions that I really want to call out that may have gotten unsung in this first game, but they showed their class certainly in the second game. We have Chris Richards really making his first full debut for the national team as a center back. We watched him all year at Crystal Palace. Big fan of the way that he played against United. We made, you know, several comments against it at the episode after Crystal Palace played United. But then Gio Reyna really locking down that 10 position, you know, for the national team. He's either not played or he's played on the right, he's played on the left. But this was two consistent starts as the number 10 position, really dictating play. Pretty unreal for those two guys. I was deeply, deeply impressed with the both of them.
No, I think... I mean, you guys have sort of all hit the big points. I think the one key thing that taking away from the USA-Mexico thing, like truthfully, I don't mind the red cards at all. Like to me, that's a USA-Mexico game. Like I would like, it's going to continue to happen, especially when you play in those hostile environments. You're getting beers thrown at you. You're getting fans throwing batteries at you. Like that's going to happen. You sort of love the fact that West steps up, Death steps up. I also think between the two games, it just sort of definitely shows just like the depth and options that we're going to have moving forward. Like between the two games, moving towards the final, like the level wasn't the same, obviously, that you're going to get with a West or that you're going to get with Tyler Adams, both in that midfield. But at the same time, we have guys that could do a job. And I think that was the most apparent thing to where, yes, it wasn't the perfect game, but also these guys only get a week and a half together. They don't get a full... Mm-hmm. 2 months that they may get before a World Cup cycle. So I think this is just something to build on. I think this might be a good segue if we want to start talking about Greg, because
yeah,
I think the job that BJ Callahan did over the two games was like fantastic. Like I think the two lineups that he set up both times, I did kind of want to see De La Torre in the final, but I think the him just going throwing Ballo straight into the 11 was fantastic. And you know, it really just sort of makes you wonder, because everything that we sort of saw, we saw Scally play the lineup that he played and with Musa, all of the stuff that Greg didn't do. And I think the craziest part about the Greg, and I'll kind of get your guys' point of view and then I can go back in, but like we hired a search firm.
Yeah.
That scouted all over the entire world, that did over 10 interviews. And as I was reading more into it, all of this stuff, of course, like remains like anonymous. Like there's rumors of who's their head coach is. There's rumors of Steve Tarundolo, some like, you know, obviously Jesse Marsh, a few obvious ones. But then again, we know nothing about anybody else. And I think that's sort of the most frustrating thing, because if there was the potential to go out and get a Vieira or go out and get somebody else, I think that's the most frustrating over all of it, is if we knew that there was genuinely better options out there and we still chose Greg, but we'll just never know.
Yeah, I'm pretty pissed about it, to be honest with you. Greg Berhalter got fired for a reason. He did not get an extension. And I think a big part of that was the whole situation with the Reynas. A big part of that was the way that he played in the World Cup and, you know, not playing certain players, not bringing certain players. And to be honest with you, I think underachieved what that team could have done at the World Cup. We moved on, and that was the right thing to do. I remember when that news came out back in January, I was so ecstatic, because thinking ahead to the 2026 World Cup, many, if not all of these guys are in their primes. This is not saying that we're going to win, but this is the time for the golden generation. And based on the way that Greg has shown that he likes to play for the last 3 years, it's going to be a waste of a 2026 World Cup. So to go through the last 6 months, and even with, you know, BJ coaching the last two games, Hodgson or whatever his name was before that, in the couple of games played, a great team and a very attacking team, very strategically set up team, only to go back to Greg 6 months later. It's like the most progressively stunting thing you can do to the U.S. men's national team. I can't fathom, and this is all speculation because we're fans, we're not inside that locker room, we're not inside, you know, those core group of guys, but when you come into a team, when you actively in press conferences from day one have to say, I have a load of work to do rebuilding the relationship with like three or four of the main contributors of the team, that is a whack ass way to reassimilate back into a program. Like you're having to do really, really difficult work from day one, which is just, for me, I think that like if I'm on that firm of looking at candidates, I'm saying that no matter where we're putting Greg, he already has four or five like steps down from where he could be, just knowing the hills that he will have to climb up when he comes back into the locker room. Now, there have been comments like, you know, Pulisic coming out and saying, you know, this is a byproduct of the work that Greg has put in for the last couple of years. I think it's a load of shit. I think that that's like a lot of like campaigning there. I think it's a load of shit. You know, Pepe, when he found out that Greg was coming back, kind of got caught off guard by a press conference. And then later came out and said, you know, I'm open to rebuilding the relationship. I just think that it's a lot of bullshit right now. Reyna hasn't made a statement for obvious reasons, but I'm pissed, to be honest with you. I think that this is a terrible appointment. And I looked at Paige yesterday and I was like, 2026 World Cup, it's a waste already. And we're so far away from it, and it's already a waste.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Henry. You kind of hit all the points that I was going to make right on the head. I can't believe we're backtracking with the talent that we have and the talent pool that is continuing to wanting to join the U.S. men's national team. I also like Gio put in a great performance against Canada. Does he now just not play when Greg comes in? Like what is going to happen?
No, it's just no.
I know.
Yeah. No, he's going to play. Like he's 1000% going.
Is he? I hope he does.
I don't think you guys, like, the only thing I disagree with is, like, the only thing that Pulisic knows under Greg is, like, they've won. They've been successful. They've built, they have two Nations League, back-to-back Nations League, a Gold Cup, a halfway decent World Cup.
With, I think that's being so generous, bro. I think that's being so generous.
With arguably, with the youngest team that we've brought to a World Cup. Now, the other point of view that I think it's negative is the fact that we haven't seen Greg to be able to make in-game adjustments
for years.
So I think, well, I think that's the biggest thing, because I think there's part of it to where it's like, it's the sensible hire. Like, because did he really ever leave? All he's missed is one camp. He's missed 2 weeks. And it's all the same players that would have been in this camp anyway. Now, would he have played the same lineups? We don't know. Nope.
So we're settling.
It could be, but at the same time, we don't know. So, like, I think that's the area. And by no means am I sitting here saying that, like,
no, I know what you're doing. You're just,
Dobes is Greg in.
I'm not Greg in unless I know that there was a 10 times better option. Yeah. Because I do think that if Greg has,
and you don't think there was, there had to have been,
bro. But like, bro, but at the same time, you have to realize that we're just at the start of this project. You have Matt Crocker, who was the sporting director from Southampton, who got to join earlier, who's essentially going to be in charge of picking the players. Like, he's the GM. Greg's the coach. So, like, it is the beginning of this cycle. By no means am I, like, ecstatic. I'm just saying that I don't think it's necessarily, like, we're fucked in 2026. Like, let's see what happens a little bit. Because at the end of the day, Greg not coaching and Gio doing what he did is best for all parties. Because Gio has shown that he has to be in the lineup.
Yeah. Like,
absolutely. Yeah, but I
agree. But I also think now a conversation has to happen between Greg and Gio. And I just don't see Greg being like, sorry. Let's put it in the past.
But listen, what did Gio do?
True.
What did Gio do?
Nothing.
Like, but then, like, what did Greg do to deserve fucking Gio's parents doing that shit? Like, that's where there's that whole thing where it's like, if Gio wants to be part of the national team future, Greg is that coach. So either, like, they come together and say, hey, like, let's win something, which they very well could do. But if not, then it's like, well, what else are you going to do? I'm just saying, like, I'm playing devil's advocate here because I get it.
Yeah.
It's a terrible look. But, like, from where we've been to where the national team has been, like, after what I've seen over the last two games and, like, Greg coming in, by no means am I like, oh, fuck. Like, now I know that when we have our dogs in the correct lineup, like, we have the ability to be one of the best teams, the best team in CONCACAF.
Josie Altidore isn't even a selection anymore.
Like, well, that's what I mean. Well, like, we have such a good squad that, like, some of those guys won't even have a shot.
Yeah. All guys. But, like, the thing is, bro, is, like, the World Cup was 6 months ago. And, like,
was the World Cup a failure?
All I'm saying is, with the exception of Chris Richards, who was injured during that time, all of those guys were available for selection and available for playing. And we saw what Greg did in the World Cup. He brought in MLS players over Joe Scally. He brought in MLS players over Gio Reyna. He makes the decisions in games. And like you said, you alluded to it, like, he fails to make the in-game adjustment. And so we can have the sporting director say, hey, here are the guys that you need to pull from. And there's, like, the joke on Twitter of saying, like, you know, Greg's back, here comes, you know, Paulo Arriola or whatever, you know, back into the lineup or whatever it is. But, like, I don't have any trust in Greg that he's going to make the proper calls in putting the guys into position. Like,
you're also forgetting that we bossed England, like, in the same World Cup, like, 0-0 to where, like, arguably one of the best teams in the entire tournament with, like, the youngest team in the entire tournament.
I get it. But, like, I don't see England settle. I mean, Southgate's also an idiot. Like, this is a terrible comparison because I think Southgate is Greg Berhalter in, like, a three-piece suit. But, like, when I think of, like, what is needed from an advancement standpoint, like, I don't want to bring this back to United, but United got top four. Like, we got top four this season. They all like performed, they did their job. And I'm still out there saying these guys aren't good enough. We need to bring in reinforcements. We need to do whatever. So I think in the same setting, I want my national team to be just as ruthless. I want to say, Greg, thank you for taking it this far. You made it to the round of 16 or 32, whatever it was, out of the group stage. You know, we could have gotten a result against the Netherlands. We didn't. Thank you so much. And we have to have that same level of who can elevate this group over the next 3 years to get us where we need to be in that World Cup. Because so, without that,
who is that?
Bro, I don't know. I just have seen the body of work that Greg has done, and I can't get on board with it.
That's the frustrating part, is that I'm in such agreement with you guys that I don't think Greg is like, I don't think that this, like, this next cycle we're going to win the World Cup. I think I would take quarterfinals, semifinals, like, Let's be realistic with our goals here. But at the same time, everybody keeps saying bitching about Greg, but nobody has a better option. Everybody keeps saying Jesse Marsh. Name a better option that would take the U.S. men's national team job.
Yeah, I want to know what's happening behind like closed like, doors but that's, and like but the that, interviews.
That's my whole thing is like Luis Enrique, yes, would we love him? Zinedine Zidane, would we love him? Pep Guardiola, would we love him? Like, of course, like there's these guys we can dream about, but realistically, like, you have to have someone.
It's hard for me to imagine that we had no interest from any.
That's how I feel coach too. Or manager, I'm like, it from has a, to be someone
from a recent top. Like, I'm telling you, give me any name and you throw it out there, I'm taking them over Greg Berhalter. If he coached a professional soccer at a high league, I'm taking him over Greg.
Frank, would you take Frank Lampard or Greg Berhalter?
Probably not.
Absolutely fucking not. There's a.
Yeah, I'd rather have a player coach.
100 coaches I wouldn't take.
Yeah, I'd probably take Frank.
Yeah, but you know, I get it. I get the argument of who else is out there, and unfortunately, like we just don't have the peak behind the curtain. And I'm never gonna wish harm on the national team, but like, I just feel like we'll clip this exact podcast talking about this exact thing and play it in 3 years' time, because in 3 years' time, we will be in the World Cup. Like, it will be going on right now in 3 years. And I think we'll be saying the same shit. Unless Greg's out of the job in 3 years and we find someone else that is going to do it in three, which is very possible. You never know. But I just think that it's not the right move. I don't have the insight behind closed doors of who else was out there. I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's tough because like, I'm just choosing to take the glass like half full, like look towards it, because we do have 3 years till then. So like, the thought would be like, as Gio Reyna is going to continue to progress, as all these players continue to progress, that like, hopefully Greg Berhalter continues to progress as a coach. I think the bigger concern is the relationship building more so than I think it is like the on-field stuff. I think the relationship building with the Gio, with the Pepe, with like a Zach Steffen, with the guys that like, because typically coaches don't oftentimes make it through two cycles. So yeah. I think that like the relationship building, if he can get those guys to buy in, and because it's very clear that we have a good culture that's in place.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, all these guys like each other. They like coming to camp. Like, look at Ballo just even joining. I think, but the Gio Reyna and.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The Pepe that situation. If he can figure that out, because I think we're all in agreement that like we're a very, like, Gio Reyna is a team that for the next decade could hopefully be in our 11 if he continues to progress. And if Greg can get over the bullshit outside and he can use him, we'll see.
We will see. You know, gentlemen, we're not going to get to the bottom of it today. I think only time will tell how the lineups go. But something that we can get to the bottom of today is what the fuck is happening with St. Louis City. We got smacked the other day, 3-1 against Nashville at Nashville. We were without Lowen, still without Klaus, but not a good performance for the boys. What happened?
I do want to say, I don't know how, if you guys watched the whole game, I'm assuming you guys all did. I don't think we looked awful. I think the scoreline doesn't do it as crazy of justice.
I think the ref missed an obvious penalty for us in the first 5 minutes of the game that I think could have changed the momentum for us. I think Giacchini was 100% fouled on that scissor kick that he made, and I think it should have been a pen, which would have completely changed the outcome of the game. I also think the red was a little harsh. I don't know if it was as I might take that back. It was definitely a red. So that obviously doesn't help for the remaining two goals. So I definitely think the scoreline was harsh. But also I will agree, like, Lowen being out and Klaus being out for a long time does not make me happy or sit well in my stomach at all. I think I've said it a couple of times. I like Miggy Perez, but like, he is getting bossed around sometimes in the middle of the park. And I don't know how long the whole, we're playing a young center midfielder, like, will get by. Like, I think we need someone to hold it down in the middle of the park there. And I don't know if a 17-year-old Miggy Perez is that.
Bro, it's,
yeah, like,
it's
he got bossed.
I don't mean this is like disrespect, because I obviously think that like Miggy has the potential, and especially with the
experience,
standing to continue growing. But like, this isn't like a charity event sort of thing where it's like everybody 100%. Gets to play. Like, this is one of those things where how many times on this podcast have we sat there and been like, you win and lose games in the midfield. And especially where he is playing that spot that is so integral to like a team that wants to high press. And then when you do have the ball, you have to keep it for the few seconds that you do have it. Like, he just gets caught up. And I think there are games where he's looked great and he's been great in possession. And, you know, he's got forward, he scored a goal. I just do think you need somebody with more experience in that position to sort of lock it down. Like, obviously there typically would be Blom there, but I still think there's a different way that you can slide that in. I will say that the one thing that obviously the game sucked, like it wasn't fun. Myung Tar, however you say the guy's name, I learned of him at the start.
Same.
Of that
didn't
game.
Know he was the MVP.
Yep. Didn't know that, but let me believe you did. Taylor Twellman remind us that he was the MVP.
How many times?
My God.
All
dude.
Of them.
I was literally sitting around like with just a whole bunch of 10 people watching this game. At least 50 times, they didn't have anything else to talk about. I swear, if Myung Tar can just, you know, gets half a chance, he's going to score. And he was class, but they for sure, it 100%.
It was a lot.
It was 100% overdid it.
I agree that it's not a charity match. We called up Schneider from the City 2 team. You know, for like a short-term loan. And if you all haven't watched him, he is a super dominant. He's about 6'4", 6'5", center defensive midfield, ball winning, great in possession, can spray a pass anywhere, but he's dominant in the middle of the park. And you compare those stats up against Miggy, who I agree with you, Nick, he got bossed all over the field. I feel like sometimes it's not fully his fault, but I think other times he just misinterprets the game. It's a little too big for him, if you will. I think that in a situation like that, I think it would have been beneficial to play maybe a City 2 guy who's been there, done that, who knows the position inside and out, and maybe bring Miggy in off the bench. There's no problem with giving him 20 minutes at the end of the game, you know, easing him into the lineup. But I think against Nashville, it's a little big of a game for him. And it's showing again, this is now three or four appearances where it shows that the game might be a little too big for him right now, unfortunately. And I feel like he might get caught in this like awkward limbo of filling a major position on the first team because we don't have depth in that position, but then can't really get the minutes with the second team because they have to rest his legs for the first team, and he just gets caught in this limbo and it might really hinder his growth. But for me, the story of this game truthfully was the defense of St. Louis City. That was by a long shot, like by a long shot, the most disjointed I've seen our back line. I know I texted this group during the game, but that was Tim Parker's worst performance in a St. Louis City shirt. And again, not all his fault. In how many times have we talked about a center back is really judged by who his partner is? And Bartlett didn't play perfect, but the amount of times that Parker was truthfully in no man's land. And then the other thing that was so uncharacteristic about him as well was there was a couple of times, I think on two of the goals, where the ball got played through and he just jogged back.
He like, has concrete in his shoes.
but like we've also seen him fucking hustle and chase down balls and do like amazing things. And I think that's what surprised me more than getting drawn out of position. We've all done it before. We've all gotten pulled out of position, but just a lack of hustling back was really disappointing for me to see. And I think in those moments, you choose whether or not you're going to put in that discretionary effort. And I think he chose not to. But, you know, just to speak for Andy Hubert, because I know that if he were here, he'd say it a million times. Bartlett is probably going to be the first guy off the team sheet once Nilsson gets recovered. Because I mean, he gets pulled out of position quite a bit, and he also fouls a lot. He gets sometimes unlawfully yellow carded, but that man gives up so many fouls. He got beat up in this game. He busted his lip open. He got called for a lot of fouls. But I mean, Hubert on the second yellow card, I agree with you, might have been a little bit harsh, but you're already on a yellow, making that tackle. Yeah, that's tough. Nerwinski, don't know why we made that halftime adjustment to put our backup to the backup left back on the right side. I think it shows a lot about our depth in those wing back positions. It was not a good look defensively for the boys. All of our teams at different times, all of our Prem teams have had issues in the spine of a team. In this last game, we were without two of our biggest spine players, and I think it showed. Makes me nervous for this upcoming game on Wednesday of what even lineup we're going to throw out. I don't know about you all, but I think it might be a 3-5-2 situation or a 3-4-2-1 situation where we kind of load up the middle of the park and maybe try some guys at wingback against a Real Salt Lake team that's not super devastating on the attack. I don't know. I'm a little curious of what you all think about this next game.
I think my biggest concern is, like, I've always believed in sort of that saying of like, you're only as good as your weakest player is. And I think top to bottom, like, our, yes, you could say injuries, three very key guys, but I think even past that, like the fact that you still have to continuously play Hubert at left back, and you can't really change Nerwinski because you don't trust Nilsson, like there's nobody else to put there. And like even Parker, like, probably needs a little bit of a rest at some point just because he has played so many minutes. And so I think that's my biggest concern is like, when you do have guys like Blom and you know, Lewin and Klaus who are so important and you can't adjust, like, we just have nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the biggest, not saying we need an MVP candidate like however the fuck you say his name, from Nashville, but like, we don't have a player that can just like at any moment score. Like, yes, Gio has scored sometimes. We've had some other guys that have contributed. Lowen's had some goals. Like, we don't have that guy that's considerably dangerous. And then when you have no depth at the back four and in the midfield, like, it's a recipe for disaster. So I think at this point, you're just trying to like find a way to be as defensively sound as you can and hit on the counter and play that pressing style. But we'll see what Carnell comes up with for Wednesday, because at this point, like, the boys are hurting for players.
Yeah, I say we're going to be grinding out results, I feel like, these next couple. And I think Carnell will be put to the test a lot. And I'm hoping he's up for the challenge.
It might be foolish of me to say, but honestly, I'd love a 3-5-2. I'd love to put Yarrow as that third center back. And then I'd like to bring up Wenzel from the second team to play as a right wing back. You know, I've watched him play several times. He plays either a center back or right back. But he has great size to him, loves getting forward, can whip in a ball. Owen O'Malley on the second team has played quite a bit. We drafted him like first round last year or this most recent year. He's been playing like a right wing back for the second team as well. I'd like to see that a little bit. Now, I don't know who would go on the left side to fill that position, but we obviously saw, I forgot to even bring up Nilsson till you said it, Dobes, but Nilsson came in the second half and he was just as poor as what we would think. But I'd like to see a 3-5-2 with some wingback situations, but it's just a matter of who we fill in those positions. I think Alm could do a job in that, like, you know, right side position, getting forward and back. But if it were me, I'd bring Yarrow into that third center back and bring in Wenzel from the second team for sure.
That's what I mentioned it a little bit last week. It's like, right now, we don't really even have the option to play three at the back. I mean, we can, but like, that's why I said we need to go get somebody that's an athletic, like defensively sound, like can play right back or can play left back very well. So that sort of allows you to play three at the back. And then at times, if you have to drop into a back four, like you can still do that, but we don't have that player right now because Nowinski can't do it. We've seen Nelson. There's four or five videos I've seen of him at this past game, just like jogging. And I think Hebert's like a very quality player as we've seen, but he's sort of, because of his ability to play everywhere, he's been played.
Oh, Dobes, you muted, bro.
Get out of position.
Am I good there now? You go. Yeah, you're caught good up. Yeah.
All right. But yeah, but Hebert, like, and he's even running out of right back. Like, he needs to be playing center back. I think that's his most dangerous position. So, like, I'm curious to see like what Lutz and what these guys come up with, because our weaknesses are clear. It's been very apparent. And this is from sort of the entire fan base. I've seen it all over Twitter. I've seen a bunch of different other podcasts and stuff sort of talking about it. Like, we need wing back help in order to able to just be like, be confident to give us like some sort of flexibility in the formations that we can play.
Yeah. The transfer market for the MLS is coming up. But that segues us into transfer updates in Europe. A lot of our teams are making some news. Doesn't necessarily mean it's all good news. We have some things to dive into, fellas. Who wants to kick us off on some transfer updates? Throw it out there.
I don't have any positives, so I'll let them kick it off.
I was going to say, I mean, me and Lucas were kind of talking about it before, and the rumor came out this morning, or it has been all week, of Kai to Arsenal. I kind of wanted to pick, or we were talking about it before, Winks kind of told me that he would be okay with it as long as it was at a decent price. I, of course, asked him what was a decent price, and he said he would save it for the pod. So I'm interested to see, Winks, what is that price for Kai that you think you would be happy with?
Yeah, it's... It's interesting because, like, so Chelsea wanted 75 million. That is a heaping pile of horse shit. Insane. We're not going to pay that.
Absolutely insane. Yeah.
I was baffled by that and, like, what they had to back that valuation at. On transfer market, his value was like 60 million. And even that's a little high for me. Granted, he's 24, incredible player, shit system. You know, there's a lot of ways to look at it. But he, knowing that Chelsea are having a fire sale, you guys are probably going to get Mason Mount for cheaper, maybe. And and obviously they're offloading all these guys to Saudi Arabia. Right. They offloaded Hakim Ziyech. They may be offloading Koulibaly. Mendy's there. So when it comes to Kai, I think that knowing that they have to get rid of these guys, right, for financial fair play regulations.
Oh, just so we can buy that, Kane, but yeah.
Or that, whatever the case is. If we're going to get him, I think like the 45-50 is a lot safer of an offer for a player like that. And when it comes to Kai, I try to look at it as what can this team become by adding him on the field? What roles can he fulfill? How dynamic can he be, etc.? So I think that one way that Kai can solve some of the problems we have is that we are missing a physically tall forward target. And some final third movement to create big chances outside of just the ton of possession that we've had this season in the final third. And so if you look at our roster this season, Granit Xhaka was our tallest player outside of our back line, and he was only 6'1". So Gabriel Jesus is like 5'8". If he's going to continue to play in that position next year, we continue to talk about depth at all of our squads, but I think he would be able to drop into that center forward role, false nine role, whatever, for parts of the game, but also be a target for Ramsdale to hit on his goal kicks that we just don't have right now. Kai could play minutes for us in those positions, and he would, you know, do a lot better job. No, he doesn't score enough goals, but looking at it from the outside in and trying to see it as a positive, I don't think that he would be coming here to score goals. I think he'd be more of a facilitator to take some of the pressure off Odegaard, which fucking sucks. But we're not going to get Osimhen. We're not going to get Haaland, obviously. We're not going to buy Kane. Fuck that. So I think that his role would be what I would imagine it to be. It's not an ideal role. It's not a permanent role, but it would be as a facilitator more, because Saka and Martinelli scored, you know, a ton of goals for us this year on the wings. And so I think that taking some of the pressure off Odegaard to produce those final third through balls and, you know, get those assists, I think that he is technically gifted. He's 24. He's, you know, won trophies, won titles, international experience. So I think that at the right price, he could fill a lot of different roles in a way that Trossard does a little bit, versus us having to kind of go back to those traditional, like, backup players in a lot of those positions. But
Kai has that ability to where he can play as a nine, but I almost think sort of like, I think, and obviously, like, let's just take Declan Rice out of the picture because we don't know what's going to happen with him yet. But like, even currently, like, Thomas Partey with like Odegaard playing as an eight, and then like Kai playing as a 10 that can also interchange with a Gabriel Jesus, like, there's a lot of balance that sort of takes place in that. And I also think when you look at the fact of right now, when Kai has been playing as a nine for Chelsea, like, he's been expected to score goals. Like, he's never necessarily been a player where like his entire job is I have to score goals. He's always been a facilitator that can also score goals. And so I think when he gets more comfortable in a role like that and has the potential to play as a 10, like, I do think that there's some benefit there. I also think that the way that Arsenal play, where they have so much of the ball, like, Kai is so technically sound that I think he can turn back the clock a little bit to 2 years ago or even Leverkusen Kai. But then again, I do think that the price tag is a big thing.
Yep.
At 80 million, like, I put myself in a Chelsea fan's shoes or even Bully's shoes. Like, you're selling them to a direct rival. Like, why would you ever in a million years try to give it to them on the absolute low? And that's why I think that's where some of that extra, like, 20 million, 50 million sort of comes in from in the evaluation.
I think if you guys got him for 50 million, that's a steal.
I think I do too. 50's a steal.
I think there is so much quality in Kai. I think we saw it at Leverkusen. Obviously, he had some spurts of beauty at Chelsea, but obviously not consistently. But yeah, 50 million for Kai, I think, would be a steal. I also completely agree with Dobes. I think his real position is a 10. I think if you guys got him for a person that you wanted to be a target man, you would be drastically not happy with his performance, because I don't think that's what he does best.
It's not, but he would do it better than a 5'8 Gabriel Jesus.
I don't even think that, but that's okay. I've watched him get bullied every head ball and every goal kick for the past year and a half. So I just, that kind of shocked me when you said that. But no, I think I would be upset to see him go to Arsenal, obviously, because of what Dobes just said. He is a rival, and he obviously did bring a great night for me as a Chelsea fan. So I always am thankful for Kai. So it would hurt to obviously see him go to Arsenal. But I do think 50 million would be a steal.
Winks, give me your thoughts, and to shift away from Kai a little bit, because I was reading into these Thomas Partey rumors that, like, he may leave this summer. So I want to get your thoughts, because I think that, like, I personally don't think you should get rid of him. But I'm curious, like even if you get Declan, I still don't think you should get rid of him. But I'm curious as just your thoughts on, because there is the Casado rumors too, so it could literally be just Xhaka and Partey out and Rice and Casado in. So curious in your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like, I don't know, dude. All these rumors are so tough to, like, decipher what's real and right. What's not.
Yeah.
Supposedly, we are allowing him to leave, but I would agree that I wouldn't want him to go, especially knowing that we're getting rid of Xhaka. It's like we go back to it again with the whole depth concept of, if we end up getting Declan Rice and then we get rid of Xhaka and Partey, like, now we're one starter less than where we started, assuming we don't sign Caicedo. We have Mohamed Elneny, Jorginho, who won't be here that much longer, and Emil Smith Rowe who can play those positions, and those just flat out aren't three guys that a title contending team can have as their backup in those positions. So I don't want to get rid of Thomas Partey. Yeah, he struggled at the end of last season. You know, was injury prone a little bit here and there, but I don't think it makes sense to get rid of both Partey and Xhaka. I think that you have to keep one or the other, and I would obviously rather keep Thomas Partey in this instance because Declan plays Granit Xhaka's role better than he would, or would fit into our midfield three in that role better than he would in Thomas Partey's role. So I think we need him still. And he's 30 years old. Yes, he's still good, but if we let him go, we're not going to get a price for him that would make sense to let him go. You know what I mean? Yeah. Especially given his form towards the end of the season. So it's a very tough call, and that's why I'm not, you know, I'm not the boss here, but I don't want to see him go quite yet.
I think he's just so important to that spine of the team. Like, and especially like that back four, that player in front of him is so important to the way that Arsenal play. And even if you do bring Declan in, like having Partey there, who's been there, done that role, and could allow Declan and Odegaard and Kai or whoever it may be. Like, I don't know, as much shit as we give Thomas Partey, like I can admit that he's a quality player. And if Arsenal were to let him go, I'd be ecstatic, to be honest with you.
Say, see ya.
See ya.
The one thing that I want to hit on with this transfer, what's going on, Nikki, with the Saudi Arabia offloading of Chelsea players? I mean,
hey, they got money, and we got players that will sell.
I feel like there's some weirder stuff going on.
They got part of Bully's business too.
There definitely could be. It's what happens when you force a club's owner to sell them. And we get a U.S. owner who owns the L.A. Dodgers. I've never been 100% sold on Todd Bowley, so all this corruption with Saudi Arabia, am I surprised? No, but hey, Man City just won a treble with doing it, so I'm okay.
So the word on the street is that Saudi Arabia owns 60% of the shares that Todd Bowley's company owns. For correct. Chelsea. So they technically are like the majority owner
correct.
In that situation. And now
they own the PGA Tour and Todd.
That's Bowley. Where our $60 million to transfers
Todd Bowley came company. From.
So now transfers are coming in for Conte, for yep. Ziyech, for Koulibaly,
yep.
Mendy, Lukaku got approached. All of these transfers for above $50 million, all of them. And yep. And in a world where there is inflated prices, obviously, but in a world where no one is paying $50 million for Mendy, in a world where no one is paying $50 million for Ziyech, and I don't, you know, I don't think that either of them are bad players, but they're not $50 million players. They're just not. If they, bro, Nick, bro, I don't even want to get into this
never,
debate
bro,
with you.
Never.
If you think
I'm okay with Ziyech, but Mendy is $50 million, you're crazy.
Based off of what?
Yeah, in what world?
Goalie of the year, Champions League final winner. Like, what do you mean?
Okay.
Behind
when?
Kepa?
Dude, I'm not paying $50 million for Casillas.
Like,
what do you mean, Casillas? Like, they're nowhere near the same level. Mendy's better than De Gea.
Bro, Casillas was the best goalie in the world years ago.
All right,
Mendy won that trophy years ago. But anyway,
years ago is
like
2 years. You're crazy. You are crazy.
Well, that's a lifetime for a soccer player.
He
though.
Didn't
you
play
never,
for
a goalie. A goalie.
But you may
didn't
never get back to
because he was
level
hurt,
again.
Henry.
Okay.
But you never may get
crazy.
Back to that level
Nick,
again.
Nick, in the takes, in the takes.
Pepa went for $63 million 3 years ago, and you're telling me Mendy is not going for 50? You are insane, Henry Wine. You are insane.
Should Kepa have gone for that?
No, but that's what I'm saying. And prices are inflated. Goalies are inflated. They're all inflated. He is not going for $50 million. He's going for more.
I'm going to stand by my original statement of none of those players are $50 million players right now at all. Do you know what Ziyech signed for Chelsea for right after his Champions League run?
I agree.
Maybe 30 because they're not $50 million players. All I'm saying is that there's weird shit going on with Chelsea in Saudi Arabia, and it's really pissing me off. If all of this comes out that, you know, obviously Chelsea spent all of that money in January, obviously, we all know that, but then they're offloading players to balance the books for these crazy inflated prices. It's a load of horseshit. Like, it's just the worst. Wait
till you guys get bought by, it'll happen to you.
Yeah, but the difference is like,
you know where money is and it, like, where it's coming in and coming out whenever, like they own the club.
The PIF has like billions.
I agree.
The PIF has billions of dollars in assets in Clear Lake, which is Todd Boehly's company, and Todd Boehly needs money to remake for the money that he spent terribly. So now they're selling all these shitty players to Saudi Arabia for triple their worth. But nothing sketchy's going on. And just because we get bought by Qatar doesn't mean that's going on. I don't think anything like that's going on with Newcastle. Is anything like that's that true. With Newcastle? Like,
facts.
That's what facts. I mean. Like this is what the sport is going to become, and these stories are going to come out. So like, it has to continue to be regulated, because like, I'm fine with Chelsea continue doing what they're doing. Like, we saw what a Todd Boehly led team did. So like, that's fine by me. I definitely think there needs to be some sort of regulation, because like, what's going to happen with Man City? Like, we're never going to know. Like, even if Chelsea does get punished, what the fuck's going to happen with them? Like, the Saudis have so much money that it does not.
They're going to take over all these majors. Like that, we could deep dive into that drastically if we really wanted to. But since we are talking about Chelsea offloading a bunch, I did want to talk about a rumor that we did just have with Nicholas Jackson from Villarreal.
Yeah.
We're rumored to sign him for, I think it is like 35 mil. And to be honest, I'm not thrilled about it, because I thought we were going to buy Kane. So that doesn't make me too happy, but I don't think it's an awful signing. We've been wanting a striker and needing a striker for a very long time.
And any worry in terms of like Harry Kane wants to play in the Champions League?
Well,
that's the thing. Is like, is there any worry in terms of like signing top guys? Like, obviously, Nkunku is going to be like a brand new signing. It's like there is going to be some change, but like, there is going to be a lot of core guys who were part of that Champions League run that are part of Chelsea. And it doesn't necessarily seem like, I mean, at least could be me, but I haven't seen any like too many rumors that I'd be like thrilled over.
No, you're right. And I think that goes back to why I was okay with us buying so many people in the last transfer season, because I knew that this would happen. I knew we weren't going to finish well. We weren't going to finish in Champions League. Well, okay, I'm saying I knew it, but I'm meaning late in the season, I knew it. It wasn't like I was thinking this was going to be the season at the beginning of the year. But as we started to realize as Chelsea fans that we probably weren't going to finish in Champions League, you are 100% right. It's harder to buy top quality players when you're not playing in those European competitions. So I think us buying a lot of people and now being able to offload the ones we don't want is giving me a little hope. Like, no, by no means am I thrilled or happy, and I don't want to portray that, but I think that gives us a little bit of cushion for these next coming seasons, because we did, like, I mean, Enzo Fernandez was still one of our signings, so like, I'm still thrilled about that, and like, I think we have some quality talent still, and we're offloading some, yes, but I think there's been other teams in worse spots trying to get back in Champions League, so I guess that's the way I'm looking at it right now.
Fair. Totally fair. Well, gentlemen, we have a new segment coming to this podcast that Lucas Winkelmann is going to take this week. We're going to look into the bet of the week. You know, we're going to look at all of the different fixtures that are going on out there, money lines, goal lines, etc., and look at what is out there for the week. So, Lucas, you want to take this week?
Yeah, boys, I am stoked about this. I feel like it's kind of been a long time coming on this pod, because every week we kind of throw out ideas for different bets. And I think with how much footy we watch and how closely we pay attention to everything, it only makes sense for us to kind of squad ride some bets with each other and offer it up to our listeners as well to ride with us. So for the first of many Mecca bets of the week, we are going to take the FC Cincinnati money line at home versus Toronto FC. Now Cincinnati is 12-1-4 this season. Toronto is 3-5-10. Cincinnati are unbeaten in their last 13 matches. That last loss was actually 5-1 against St. Louis City back in mid-April. So that's a little fun tidbit there. But Cincinnati have an opportunity here to secure their 13th win in 18 MLS games, which would be a record in the MLS. Toronto's only taken 4 out of a possible 24 points on the road this season and haven't scored in 4 of their last 6 away matches. I really don't want to touch the over-under here because Cincinnati could cover that themselves. I think it's at 2.5 right now, but I think there's a lot of value in -160 right now on DraftKings and FanDuel for the Cincinnati money line. And I think that the overall depth and kind of form that FC Cincinnati have had recently should help them maintain their perfect home record. So we on the Mecca banner are going to ride Cincinnati money line on Wednesday.
You heard it here first, folks. Thank you so much, Lucas Winkleman. And last but not least, we are going to end our episode tonight with a factor cap brought to you by Nick Haeflinger.
Shout out my boy Bucci Maine for not being on the pod today, but I will provide our factor cap for Poser. This week. I'm going to ride with this whole new storyline of the U.S.-Mexico rivalry, and I think our new signing, Ballo, factor cap boys, will never lose to Mexico in a U.S. jersey.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good shout.
Factor cap.
Lose? So that doesn't include draws.
Well, so he will not lose, so win or draw.
So we get a double chance on Ballo.
On the next at 21 years old for the next.
I know. 10 years.
I mean, logically, I kind of want to say just cap.
Just because you never
that's
know.
Your cap.
Because that's a long time. And by your guys' logic, Greg's coming back, so we're fucked.
Yeah, we're fucked.
So
we're fucked.
But Mexico's fucked too, is all.
I will say Mexico. I'll go like next cycle. We won't lose to them in this World Cup cycle. I'll give you.
Yeah, that's fair. That. Yeah.
Okay.
How many times do you think we'd play them? How many more times do you think outside of potentially getting them in the World Cup at some point? How many more?
I'd say
times?
I was twice a year.
No, it's not necessarily twice a year, but we'll get them 2 more times in like with the real team, 2 more times in World Cup qualifying, home and away. And then we may get him in like a tournament or something like that. But the real team, because like the Gold Cup's coming up, but like,
yeah,
I think Mexico's doing what we're doing.
When I was formulating this question, I was trying to think about how many games that would be. And I guess like 12 or 15 range.
Yeah. Yeah. The Gold Cup's going to be funny because it's all MLS players. It's like no one and Dest.
My heart says fact. Because of the state of the Mexican national team right now, my brain says cap that we may lose 1 or 2 of those several games. If your 12 to 15 is right, I predict that if we do lose, it's only 1 or 2 though. Yes, we have Greg and it is what it is, but I think that we've talked about it the last couple years, even before the World Cup, about how excited we are about this group of young guys that we have that again are going to be in their prime in 2026 and how dangerous that group is going to be. So if that holds true, you know, my heart says fact here.
I also want to add a little caveat. I did do say Ballo in a USA jersey. So if he's not playing.
Yeah, like if he's not playing. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's why I'm going to say fact. Because
that's what I'm saying. I'm thinking if he's in the lineup, it's an important game and we're winning.
Yeah.
And we're also surrounding him.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go fact for that specific reason. I'm going fact.
I will say that like we have the majority of these, like, I think sort of the change has been like the majority of these dual nationals. Of like the Mexican, like Americans, like Ricardo Pepi are choosing to play for the United States if they can. And I think that's going to make, because I do think that there has been that shift that people see the change in culture and the trajectory of both. And a lot, there's even a few more that are like dual, that are playing in the MLS that I've been reading about that are want to choose the United States. So
That guy from Cincinnati, like, just came out last week and said
never heard of him. Watch some highlights. Looks pretty cool. Sounds great.
That's sick. Yeah, Brandon Vasquez did it earlier this year, which he's Greg not won't touching play the first team, but whatever. But that's a good one, Nikki. I like that. I think when Ballo's playing, I think that we're winning out. But that concludes today's episode of the Mecca Banter. Fellows, great job tonight. As always, check out our Twitter, check out our Instagram and our TikTok. We're lively on all of those channels. We'll catch you guys next week. And until then, good job, fellas.
Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers.